Welcome to MetaStrategy's Forum on World-Class IT. I'm Peter High, and I'm pleased to welcome Greg Myers to the broadcast. Greg is the Chief Information Officer of Motorola Solutions, the $6 billion telecommunications equipment provider that succeeded Motorola Incorporated following the spinoff of Motorola's mobile phone division. As CIO, Greg is responsible for the entire IT organization company-wide. Prior to Motorola Solutions, Greg worked in multiple technology roles within the pharmaceutical industry, including stints as the Vice President of IT at Biogen, Vice President and CIO of Novartis Consumer Health, and Director of Sales and Customer Technology at Johnson & Johnson. Greg received his Bachelor of Science degree in Marketing from Rutgers University Camden and his MBA from Temple University. I recently caught up with Greg by phone from his office in Chicago, and our conversation covered World-Class IT Principle 1, people, as we discussed the changing skills and priorities within the department as he's worked to insource previously outsourced services, Principle 4, IT and business partnerships, as we discussed how he has worked to shift the culture from a service provider to strategic business partner role. We also discussed his career path from the pharmaceutical industry to his current role, priorities on his strategic roadmap for the year ahead, and his view on how his organization will be part of the Internet of Things revolution, as well as a variety of other topics. This is Peter High. Please consider reading my new book, Implementing World-Class IT Strategy, How IT Can Drive Organizational Innovation. The book covers topics such as the CIO as strategic facilitator, the development of IT missions, facilitating corporate and divisional strategy, the development of IT's own strategic plans, the development of enterprise architecture, reviewing, refreshing, and communicating strategy, and several other topics, all told with stories from leading CIOs from a variety of major corporations. You can find it at Amazon.com, my publisher's website, Wiley.com, and at your better bookstores. Thank you very much. Greg Myers, welcome to the Forum on World-Class IT.
Thanks, Peter.
It's a pleasure to speak with you. I thought we'd begin with your company. You are the Chief Information Officer of Motorola Solutions. And although Motorola is, of course, an iconic brand and a company that many people are familiar with, some of the nuances of what Motorola Solutions might be new to people. I think probably a lot of people still think of the organization as the company that makes the handset, so to speak. I wonder if we could just begin actually just with an overview of the organization's business as well as your role as Chief Information Officer.
Yeah, sure thing. I mean, just some background. Motorola Solutions is the original parent of the 88-year-old now Motorola, which is, I think, a pretty legendary company in world history. So we were really invented the two-way radio. We invented the mobile phone. When the first man landed on the moon and spoke the first words, it was on a Motorola radio. When Steve Jobs introduced Macintosh to the world in 1984, it was on a Motorola chip. But I think over time, the company has really begun to focus its investments. We spun off a number of businesses, including the Motorola consumer brand that a lot of people may know, to a company which is now held by Lenovo. And so right now, we are a little bit over $6 billion company that is a leader in public safety. So a lot of people that know our business now know it for our two-way radios and really providing some of the most reliable voice communication networks from around the world that is very much focused on the areas of public safety. So think police, fire, EMS, that sort of thing. But we're also, as a company, focused on smart public safety, which is really looking at how first responders use advanced technologies to help communities be safer and work more efficiently.
And can you provide just an overview of what is within your purview as CIO?
Sure. So it's a pretty simple structure. We're one business unit, one division. And so I'm the head of IT for really the whole company. We're a global company in about 150 different locations around the world. And really, I'm responsible for all the IT that you'd expect, which would include the typical systems around G&A, so the ERP environment, the HR systems, legal systems, the supply chain systems, but also play an important role in stuff that focuses on the front office. So a very large part of our business is actually done over e-commerce. And so my organization is responsible for all the digital interfaces that we have with our customers, both pre-sales marketing, actual commerce of products, services, and software, as well as post-sale support. And then I think increasingly we're also moving into areas where we're helping to incubate core technologies that are helping our business evolve into a company that's focused on cloud, big data, and those areas. And so we incubate a number of those technologies as well.
That's very interesting. Can you talk a bit about some of the things that are on your roadmap for the year ahead?
Yeah, absolutely. There's really, for us, I think there's about, I would say maybe three things that we're primarily focused on as a department. Revenue around managed services, private LTE, but also a smart public safety. We're seeking to transform from an IT perspective how we interact and engage our customers that have both helped to drive top line, but also simplify and make it easier for us to do business with them. And that obviously helps improve our bottom line, but also helps improve the customer experience. The second thing is really helping to reimagine our culture. So by adopting what we call a cloud-first, mobile-first, wireless-first philosophy, we're looking to really untether our workforce from cubicles and wires in their offices to allow them to collaborate wherever they need at any time. And so, we had a pretty well-publicized change last year where we moved 22,000 users from the Microsoft stack to Google stack in one day. We have the largest PBX to cloud transition ever made in the world. We have over 5,000 seats that are purely voice over IP. There's no hardware, no phone closets are gone. And then I think the third thing is really around rethinking what IT means to the company. So rather than it being, sort of a back office function that is keeping support and systems alive, how do we help the company and our customers capitalize on some of the discontinuous shifts that are caused by move to mobile, to cloud, and then this very complicated environment around security, digital mobile that really helps us not only in IT have the best talent that we can ultimately export to our business to help create future products and services, but also, help to dog food or incubate a number of those services that will eventually make way into the products and services that we commercialize.
As you described your purview and your strategies, it's clear that you have a lot of customer contact and do a lot of thinking about topics like, as you mentioned, customer experience, interacting with customers, and so on. That's not necessarily yet the domain of the average IT department. I'd be interested in your methods of engaging external customers. How do you do so, and with what frequency do you do so? What methods have worked best in order to glean the right kinds of insights in order to help sort of shape some of the strategies you just described?
Yeah, well, I'll give you a very simple example. I mean, last week, the IT organization in partnership with our CTO group conducted a focus group of a number of our reseller community, talking about how we start to move more towards a self-service environment to make it simpler or easier for some of our digital products to be purchased. A lot of our products are very complicated, customizable systems, and really the product catalog is immensely complicated. So, we engage them in a conversation of how you create maybe a common product configurator that they might be able to use on their websites to be able to make it easier for customers to purchase. I think the other thing that is important to know is a lot of who we're selling to CIOs within the public sector. So these might be big cities, local governments, or even big countries. One of the things that is important to know is a lot of the things that they're going through is very similar to what we're going through. And so we have had an occasion to be able to share notes on how do public safety agencies get comfortable moving towards the cloud and leveraging those things. So we spent a lot of time thinking about those kinds of strategies. And as I said earlier, we try to incubate a number of those capabilities so that as we're going out and showing our customers what it means to move to the cloud or how to move away from having lots of on-premise infrastructure, how can Motorola Solutions play a role in being a service provider in areas outside of maybe the traditional encrypted voice that they're used to. We're starting to become more and more like an IT provider, which I think has been very interesting because as the IT department, we've kind of gotten there first. And so we're really helping to understand our customers and how they move along that journey. And then also looking at some of the products and services and the innovations that we have as a company and how they have to be able to evolve to be able to meet the needs of customers.
Understood. And it must be useful as CIO working with CIOs to lend an empathetic ear, so to speak, since you have the role at least in common. Can you talk a bit about some of those interactions, speaking peer to peer?
Yeah, sure. I mean, when we're sitting down or when I'm sitting down talking to some of my peers in the public sector, I think it's very vivid for them. A lot of the things that we went through, several years ago, they're sort of going through now. So they're So they're seeing challenges with the brain drain, and like a lot of companies are in the tech sector. And they're starting to look at, okay, if I'm not going to do big capital investments to go out and buy a lot of Motorola radios at once, being able to do that as a service over time, you know, that for them is they're starting to shift more towards an outsourcing model. So very similar to when IT went and did a lot of offshoring 10, 15 years ago, they're actually starting to come to it now, saying that they really have to shift more towards an outsourcing, offshoring, or outsourcing arrangement. We obviously are both a service provider in some of those areas, but then also, you know, as an IT shop, we've made a lot of changes. We did a major outsourcing of our company about 10 years ago, and now we're in the process, for example, of moving from a very traditional, let's say, co-location to really moving, you know, a quarter to a third of our workload to AWS over the next year. And that is really interesting to them, right? A lot of them are mulling over whether it's time to move to Office 360 or Google. They're very interested in a lot of things that we've done. So I think it's probably usually two conversations. One is, you know, primarily, how did you guys do that? You're a big company. You're very established. You've been around for a while, just like us. You know, how did you make that change? How did you manage the change among your employee base and your vendor base? But then also as a service provider, you know, how can you help us, you know, move along that continuum as well?
Very interesting. You talked about also another one of your strategic priorities is reimagining the culture. You talked about the cloud first, wireless first, some of the changes that you've just reiterated. I'm curious about the people aspect of that as well. I know that hand in hand with that was also a cultural change from being a more typical IT department, the sort of support organization, to one that you've been describing as the customer-facing source of innovation to a greater extent. What sort of people changes were necessary, either reskilling or even just reimagining the current workforce while also supplementing it with new kinds of skills?
Yeah, and you're talking more about the changes within the IT function, right, in terms of being able to operate in that kind of agile way, or did you mean employee and changes to the employee base?
Really a combination of those. Yeah, both people as well as process changes that were necessary in order to reimagine the culture, as you put it.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because obviously it's a huge change management challenge. So I'll talk about the employee base first. I mean, you know, moving 22,000 people in many, many time zones in over 150 offices all in one day, changing systems they've used for 20, 25 years to do email and documents was obviously a really traumatic change in a lot of ways. But, you know, we used it as an example to really talk about all the things we wanted to do, right? Move faster, collaborate more, untether yourself from offices. So we spent so much time thinking about types of trauma that it could create and really being very empathetic about that change. And so we, for example, went out and recruited 2,000 volunteers in the business to actually help be embeds to really train and support people through a lot of those changes of the technology, because it all happened in one day. And then I'd say empathy is probably the biggest thing that has to change, that had to change in the IT side. I think most of the IT folks, and I've been around about a year and a half, but most of the IT folks, you know, their main focus has always been in the language of tickets or users, or they're kind of like, we even talk about them in this abstract form, like they're these things, but really what they are is human beings. And making a major change to tools of how people collaborate, there's always going to be three groups of people, people that really just love new things and are going to love anything that's new and different. There's a lot of people that just hate change, are going to hate whatever it is that you do if it's different. And then there's this very large group of people in the middle that just want to be able to get on with their day job and move on with the change. And I think that being able to think about these people as human beings, as opposed to tickets or changes or incidents, or I mean, that's a big mindset shift for the IT function. And I think really, you know, so on that day, when I moved to Google, I had every single person in IT do nothing. They gave up their day job for really 2 days and sat embedded with business partners really in the kind of help desk roles. And I think it forced people to go back to the basics of why we're here, that we are at the end of the day a service provider, but doesn't mean we need to be an order taker. But there really is a huge human element, a lot of this change. And to get people to be interested in changing the culture, they have to feel like they're enrolled and being brought along. Not that this is something being done to them for either a cost-saving reasons or because the CIO said so, but it was really something that, you know, enrolled them in wanting to create a culture that people could collaborate or access information wherever they are. But that did mean that there was a lot of learning of a lot of basics that they weren't used to. So I think both of them kind of worked, you know, hand in hand.
And did you find, speaking of IT itself, becoming more of a strategic enabler or becoming more customer-centric? Again, those were not historically, as I understand it, the way in which IT saw itself, changing that mindset within the department. I'm curious what methods you used, and then likewise, what skills were missing or gaps that you needed to fill, as you assess the changes that were necessary.
Yeah, I mean, in a lot of ways, technically speaking, our direction of sort of being cloud first, mobile first, wireless first actually makes it easier technically, right? Because there's less support. We don't have, for example, an email team anymore. But I do think that what it did change was the endpoint of IT. So 10, 15 years ago, we outsourced the help desk, right? Like a lot of other companies. But for example, when we made the shift, we re-insourced a lot of the workplace queries, and we shifted a lot of the questions that normally would show up to maybe. We have an offshore center in Malaysia that takes a lot of the triage help desk calls. We shifted that to social media. So we encourage, users to actually post questions on our social media site that we have. And then we had, employees of IT, answer them. So we actually encouraged people to crowdsource answers. So it really went way beyond, this normal mindset of, okay, there's a knowledge base and that there's a trained set of contractors that are designed to answer questions, to really making it kind of out in public, where now all of IT, not even IT, but I was amazed when we did that by how many just average citizens are passionate about helping people with problems. And so we were able to exponentially raise the number of people, helping support our user base by, putting that out in social media, allowing people to other users to help each other. So that was just tremendous. We didn't really expect that it would take off the way that it did, but it was really great.
Were there additional sort of org structure changes that were necessary? I mean, as you described, things that offshore partners or outsourced vendors were managing that were then brought back in, that would suggest perhaps new departments or filling in departments to a greater extent. Were there, from an org structure perspective, have you made any significant modifications in light of some of the changes you've described?
Yeah, I would say the structure itself hasn't changed, but for sure we've started to reacquire some talent. So as I mentioned, the people answering those questions were employees. So we started to roll back some of the contracts that we've had. I think when you look at the co-location sort of outsourcing of the data centers, I mean, we have over 30 data centers now that, we expect the vast majority of them will have exited. So you're going to ramp down contracts and the structures you have with existing providers, and you'll start to move with different ones. So I would say it's more of a shift of what types of providers you use, but also as you make that shift, for example, if you move from using traditional private cloud to moving to public cloud, it's a very different skill set. There's a ton of training you've got to be able to do, but also you do have to acquire some expertise from the outside. So, we've over the last year or so probably added about 20% of the IT organization is new from the outside in the last year. So we really, kind of gone out in a big way and started to bring in some outside in thinking to help us think about how to be more innovative, not just for how IT does its business, but how do we also help to, move our product and services teams, the ones that are commercializing product, and thinking about how our customers move to the cloud, how we start building smart public safety solutions in the cloud, how we start looking at contextual engines that will help police officers do their jobs better. How do you actually start to use the hiring of people that you already need to do to make these changes in IT? But then how do you sort of loan those people almost in a way that they're a center of excellence that helps our company, for a long time, it's been kind of a narrow band company focused on devices, begin to really start looking at future solutions in a very different way. So we've really viewed a lot of the importing of talent to not only, jumpstart the IT transformation, but also to help the transformation of the company as a leading provider of smart public safety solutions.
You'd spent more than a decade in the pharmaceutical space prior to joining Motorola Solutions. You'd worked for a number of big companies, J&J, Novartis, Biogen, among them. And I'm curious, as you prepared for a new industry in addition to a new company, how you went about doing so. And then likewise, getting into a new company in a new industry, what you have found to be some of the universal truths of value, how value can be created within IT versus the nuance of one industry versus another.
Yeah, I mean, maybe I probably should spend a minute on why I came to Motorola. So when I was at, I really enjoyed being in the life sciences business and wasn't necessarily looking for an industry change per se, but one thing to know is I was a fireman, firefighter for 5 years, and I've been in situations where I've been in burning buildings and the Motorola radio was the only thing tethering me, actually a lifeline to the outside world. My father was a firefighter for 25 years, and so I really kind of had this emotional connection with the company that was really compelling. And I think that was sort of similar, sort of a similar attraction the way it was maybe in pharmaceutical or biotech, where your products are out there changing lives or saving lives. I think it's a very similar analog here in Motorola. So that really was very exciting for me. In terms of the transitioning to a different industry, I mean, I think that, you know, I've been a believer that a lot of the technology changes that you look at, whether they're in the last 5 years, big data, social, mobile, cloud, whatever they all are, I mean, they all have, I think 70 to 80% of the concepts are all the same, but the last 10 to 20% are maybe more of the vertical, you know, nuances. So in pharmaceutical, you have a lot of regulations you're dealing with the FDA. But in our business, we have a lot of regulations that are specifically related to our customers, because in every country that we do business in, there are a lot of regulations about what our customers do and don't allow us to do. So it's just around really the last 10 to 20% being able to apply it to the specific vertical. But, you know, to be honest, being a CIO in a high-tech business is really awesome, because, you know, I came here and the CEO of the company, you know, will stop me in the hall and say, hey, did you see about, you know, the Dell EMC merger? You know, what did you think of that? You know, that didn't happen at a consumer company or a pharma company. It just was very low on the radar. But here, I think IT and what goes on the industry is very high on the radar. So in some ways, it's great because you're kind of in this environment where everybody enjoys the same interests that you do. But in some ways, it's also a challenge, because there's 5,000 engineers at this company, you know, that actually probably know more about networking than my team does. So I think it is that adjustment that the ante is a lot higher in terms of the credibility you need to have and being able to move forward with a purpose and direction that is, you know, what people believe is consistent with, you know, the spirit of the company.
It's an interesting point you make, that you're surrounded by people who are at least as deeply technical as the team that you run. And I'm curious, in that sort of an environment, the way in which you think about creating value and communicating what IT is doing, is it different from how you had done so traditionally in an organization that was, as you point out, not nearly as technical as this one?
I think so. First of all, I think that the visibility is much higher. So people are just a lot more interested here in what we're doing. And I think they also believe that the stakes are very high. So if you think a very simple example of, you know, I met with one of our big commercial customers that, you know, said, it is so hard to do business with you guys in some ways, because if we're buying something from you in Europe, I have to go through a different process. You do use different product names and numbers than if I do it in North America. So I can't do something as simple as a portal, like a procurement portal. So now that's caused us to really start thinking about all of our back office systems. We're in a major project now that's consolidating 7 different ERP systems down to one. So, yeah, I think that really people, the CEO and that and the executive committee on down, all see the value of what IT can do, because it is not only it's what we sell, but it's also, you know, kind of our lifeblood. As we're selling services and software, you know, you have to have systems that are able to know the difference between what's a product and what's a piece of software and how that build, and just a lot of things like that required a lot of rethinking. So I think there's just has been a lot more attention and a spotlight on what we do. And I think that, you know, that spotlight burns, you know, both ways, that, you know, if there are missteps, they're really obvious to people that, you know, maybe know you should have done better, but also really get and understand the value that IT transformation can bring to everything from how we build out our services capability to how we go out and do very large systems integration deals with big customers that are trying to outsource their work. You know, it's not just about selling products or devices anymore. And I think that the burden and the possibility of what IT can bring to that is massive. And I think a lot of people see that.
You started to talk about some of the rising trends like big data, social, mobile, cloud. I'm curious, as you look forward, whatever the time horizon you might choose, 2, 3, 4 years out, what are some trends that are starting to make their way onto your radar that are particularly exciting you?
The interesting thing about, I'm not sure that I've seen it move faster in the last, my whole career, I'm not sure I've seen things move faster than I have in the last 4 or 5 years. But I do think that, you know, Gartner has this hype cycle curve, which I really love. And it talks about, you know, when something gets to the top, you know, it's at the peak of inflated expectations. And then it ultimately, most of these things drop into the trial of disillusionment. So I think probably what's next with a lot of the technologies for them to just stabilize and mature. If I think about big data, and I guess we're moving now to artificial intelligence is the name, but a lot of that probably has sort of crossed into this chasm of people all know what it is, but they're not sure how to apply it. And I think there's a real opportunity now for the vendors to consolidate, for that technology to get more mature. We are an Internet of Things company. So, you know, a very simple example is we go through partnerships and things that we do in R&D. We can equip a police officer with a gun that has a sensor on it that when a gun or a MACE container is withdrawn, that we would know that, or that a 911 center might know that. They've got a body camera that we sell that is not just voice, but has a camera built into it. We have potentially vests that can look at heart rate, blood pressure. So if you look at tying all those sensors together, okay, you've got an officer who's got a higher blood pressure, higher heart rate, gun's been drawn, and they're moving quickly. It's very interesting information to the headquarters, to a 911 center. That's all Internet of Things. And I think if you look at that, that space is so immature in terms of the vendor support. A lot of it is still open source. The vendors haven't gotten behind it yet. So I think that there is a whole lot of room for stabilization and maturity in IoT and data. And so for us, those are really big trends that we're interested in commercializing. And then I think, of course, it's the move to the cloud. The public cloud is so compelling in terms of being able to expand capability. So if you think about body-worn cameras, right, which are pretty, we've gotten a lot of press in the last year. You know, we have products now that allow that video to be streamed into a central location of where it can be stored and analyzed. You know, there's a big role that we think public cloud, has to play in being able to make that economical to store and computationally elastic to process. So, those things for us, I mean, I know that they're not really, they're kind of the last 2 years, but they really have a long way to go to mature, and we think are going to really provide a lot of transformational capabilities for our customers.
Excellent. Well, Greg Myers, thank you so much for joining us on the forum on World Class IT. It's been a great conversation.
Thanks, Peter. Thanks for having me.
You've just listened to a podcast in a series we call Meta Strategies Forum on World Class IT. If you like what you've heard, please consider reading my book, World Class IT, Why Businesses Succeed When IT Triumphs, published by Josie Bass, a division of Wiley Press, in December of 2009. Both the book and the forum on World Class IT offer stories from a wide range of top IT leaders relating to Meta Strategies' five principles of World Class IT. The five principles are as follows. Principle one is people, and it's really the foundational principle. Without the right people doing the right jobs at the right time, it'll be nearly impossible to achieve excellent performance. The second principle is infrastructure. We like to say that this is the principle that separates proactive organizations from reactive ones. If infrastructure is not reliably performing its tasks, the IT organization will become stuck in reactive mode, consistently fighting fires. If systems and hardware and networks and so on work reliably, then a larger portion of the organization can think about the future. The third principle is project and portfolio management. This is the engine through which new capabilities can be brought to bear on behalf of the company. It is important to ensure that projects are delivered on time, on budget, and on target, and that the portfolio collectively supports the objectives of the business. The fourth principle is IT and business partnerships. It's important that, first and foremost, the different parts of IT, from business analysis to development and QA, through to support and all other aspects of IT, communicate effectively and efficiently. It's equally important, then, that IT develop a partnering relationship with the business that it is a part of. If the three prior principles are done well, then IT should earn a place at the strategy setting table, driving different parts of the business strategy. The fifth and last principle is external partnerships. Outsourcing is becoming a crucial weapon that organizations are employing, and managing these relationships to ensure that value is achieved is critical. In the fourth principle, the organization has learned and contributed to the discussion about what is strategic and what is not. Once that's clear, then it will be easier to determine which aspects of IT might be better managed by external partners or vendors. For more information on these five principles and the sub-principles that are associated with each, please visit our website at www.metastrategy.com, and please share your thoughts and comments by contacting us at feedback@metastrategy.com. And our theme music was written by David Armin. I'm Peter High. Thanks for listening.